Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz. As the holiday season approaches, merchants are gearing up for the busiest and most profitable time of the year. From stocking up their inventory to bolstering their e-commerce presence, merchants are leaving no stone unturned to make the most of the shopping frenzy. But this year, there's a growing concern that goes beyond the traditional challenges. Friendly fraud, a deceptive and increasingly tricky issue, is on the rise. Joining me today to explore how friendly fraud is becoming a thorn in the side of merchants, causing financial losses and operational headaches, is Director of Merchant Fraud Product at ACI Worldwide and MRC board member Amanda Mickelberg, as well as Dan Key, Senior Analyst of Merchant Services and Javelin Strategy and Research. They're going to delve into the need for enhanced fraud orchestration strategies that will help shine a light on the true identity of each transaction. Amanda and Dan, it's great to have you with us today. To start things off, Amanda, the holiday season is approaching and businesses and organizations are gearing up. They're stocking up their inventory as well as strengthening their e-commerce and fraud strategies. From a payments perspective, what do you predict will happen this year?
Yeah, sure. So overall, we're seeing certainly a continued growth in e-commerce. So as of Q3, we're seeing around a 16% year-on-year growth. And fraud attempts are definitely, unfortunately, also still prevalent at around 3%. I think what's really interesting, and I think certainly for the holiday season this will continue, is we're seeing an increased prevalence of friendly fraud. And unfortunately, and if you looked at sort of the top 10 fraud typologies, you've got the perfect storm of synthetic identity fraud being used to create accounts. But then equally, you've got genuine customers who are committing friendly fraud, possibly as a result of some of the economic challenges that we're seeing in the industry. I think also the problem we've got is that the payment journeys are no longer linear. So we're used to the old sort of four-party model of merchant, acquirer and issuer with the schemes in there as well. And now you've got all these alternative payments. You've also got customers browsing and buying in different channels. You've got customers having deliveries to home or collecting in store. So this sort of non-linear element is, I think, also an added challenge. So it's important for the merchants. They've got to be aligned to this change in behavior. There was a lot of talk post-pandemic about how it had changed the face of e-commerce. And I don't know if it's necessarily changed the face. And indeed, we've seen a lot of people very happy to go back to some of that bricks and mortar shopping. But I think people have become a lot better educated in e-commerce. So their demands are for a fast checkout. They want as little friction as possible in there. And yet where you've got these challenges of synthetic fraud, friendly fraud, the need to be sure of someone's digital identity is greater than ever. And I don't think a lot of merchants are really fully understanding that. What that's going to potentially mean is that either the strategies they have in place today are going to allow in more fraud, or indeed they're going to create additional cost on their business by declining good business. Equally, they're going to incur cost from possibly slowing too many transactions down through peak to do those extra checks offline before they accept orders, which, yes, works, but it's a huge amount of heavy lifting.
Yeah, the holidays always exacerbate existing issues. So I think merchants and merchant service providers often want to kind of put their head down and get through the holidays and make a lot of sales and figure out issues later. But you really can't do that with things like friendly fraud, et cetera, going into the holidays, because they're only going to pick up. There's only going to be more and more of them. And you can't just cover your eyes. You need to really have a plan for all these different issues, especially friendly fraud.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
On the topic of friendly fraud, we've been hearing how it's very top of mind for a lot of businesses and organizations. Amanda, for those that are tuning in, can you speak to why that is and kind of give us a brief explainer too on friendly fraud?
Yeah, sure. And friendly fraud is a really broad term. So I think just to sort of set the stall out, I'm going to name two or three, but that's not an exhaustive list of the different types of friendly fraud. I could probably get to a list of 30 different types of fraud that are committed by genuine customers. But what we're seeing at the minute in terms of a sort of more prevalent type of friendly fraud is one where customers are making those transactions genuinely and either for whatever reason deciding that they don't want to pay for them. So that might be that they claim that that item has never turned up and ask for another item. It might be that they actually have got the item, but they're not very happy with it. So they charge it back, or they charge back the payment and say it wasn't them that made the purchase in the first place, even though the retailer is pretty sure it was. There's also the refund abuse. We're seeing an increase in refund and returns abuse at the minute. And this is where customers may not be returning the items themselves. They could be returning other items in its place. And by the time, basically relying on the merchant's processing of that refund, they get the refund back on their credit card. And then the merchant discovers that actually the item was not returned at all, or it was damaged. There's numbers of different ways that merchants are causing this problem. On those that are charged back, there are a few mitigating steps that have been put in place by the schemes. Visa, most notably, have reissued their compelling evidence conditions, so CE 3.0, which is really designed to help merchants to challenge friendly fraud or first party fraud when it occurs. And that means that when a customer does actually make a chargeback on a transaction where the merchant is pretty convinced that it was the genuine cardholder, then there are further evidence submissions that can be made to prove that it was the individual that made that transaction. So I think that's a really positive step. I think MasterCard is still waiting to see what Visa does around that, but utilizing some of the data that is in that transaction to do that. So things like the device ID, the IP, the addresses, there's a number of different data points that can be submitted now as evidence that it was the genuine consumer. I think also because we are seeing that friendly fraud has increased significantly. So it's around $85 billion at the end of 2022. And we are expecting that over 10% of returns within most merchants globally are actually fraudulent ones. So this isn't a problem that's going to go away. So I think the more mitigating steps and the more consideration that merchants place on understanding their returns and refund data, the better. And quite often there is a disconnect between the front end sale and the refund and return that occurs in the background, quite often because they're different teams.
That's an excellent explanation of friendly fraud. I just want to emphasize that friendly fraud is not just one thing. As you said, there's so many different kinds of friendly fraud, which means that there's not just one problem you're facing as a merchant, and also not just one solution to it. It's a lot of different areas to consider at once. There's not just one band-aid you put on this. It's a complicated issue with complicated solutions as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the number one thing is it's not friendly. It's not friendly at all. But certainly you'll hear the term first party fraud that's utilized a bit in the industry. It's the same thing. So first party fraud, friendly fraud, it's the same thing. We saw a lot of it during the pandemic where we had customers that were actually disgruntled because a lot of tickets for theater shows, tickets for concerts, etc., airline tickets is an example, or holidays, were not being refunded. They were either having vouchers offered or nothing. We saw a lot of chargebacks then, but that has by far accelerated into many other different guises now.
So we figured out that friendly fraud is in fact not very friendly, and it's also quite tricky for a lot of businesses, organizations, and merchants in particular. Amanda, you kind of touched upon this in terms of the steps that lots of firms and organizations can take to help prevent friendly fraud. Also provide a bit more detail, because I'm sure it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of approach too. So what's the best way to really tackle it?
Yeah, and you're right. It is tricky. Data is really key. I know that always sounds a bit boring to say, oh, it's all about the data, but unfortunately it is. And I mentioned previously about the disconnect between often the returns and refunds are processed by a different department to maybe the fraud and risk team. So unless there's a known prevalent returner, they may not know that the sale that happened in the front end, you know, there may be this disconnect. So I'd definitely call on any finance managers to have a look into that and make sure that those teams are aligned. But as I said, data really is key to this. So it's very difficult when the transaction is being processed via the authorization in milliseconds, because typically that's where the fraud strategy would sit. But I think what's very important is to make sure that any strategy that merchants have doesn't just look at the checkout phase of that interaction with the consumer. That consumer has already spent probably a bit of time on their website already. So they logged into an account, maybe. They certainly entered the website and accepted the cookie policy. So the engagement starts at that point. There's a ton of data that happens before it gets to checkout. So behavioral analytics is a really important part of the process. So understanding the navigational behavior of that consumer. But again, if it's a genuine consumer, that's going to check out fine, invariably. So utilizing that returns and refund knowledge that's been gleaned from previous transactions, making sure that there's nothing obvious that could be changed in that internal process at the front end. There's also the benefit of things like network intelligence. So these are pools of information that is held from a number of different customers and merchants. It's all anonymously pulled, but contains data that relates to known previous frauds. That can be a really, really beneficial snapshot of data that can add to that front-end checkout. Because if it's happened before somewhere else, there's a high chance that it could affect the merchant today. So to have that sort of intelligence in there, so any related fraud transactions can potentially be flagged as higher risk. We're not saying they're definitely fraud. They're just a bit higher risk because we've seen some anomalous activity that's taken place. But it's important to make sure that, again, those transactions that complete successfully and result in a sale, the corresponding any refunds or returns, any data that's acquired post-checkout is also logged. So that front-end fraud screening that's being managed by the revenue protection team, business protection team, fraud analysts at the merchant level, they can utilize that data to prevent anything obvious from happening again. So if there is a prolific abuser of policies, then policy strategy can be put in place alongside the fraud and risk strategy.
Absolutely. You know, one thing I want to call out with preventing, you know, friendly fraud and first-party fraud, which is incredibly important, is that you do need to be very careful, because if you are incorrect, this is a customer that you are having an issue with. And again, the tools help a lot in making sure you are not just pointing it at your customers randomly and offending people who are not committing any kind of fraud. But it's important to remember that there may be a different weight to it sometimes than other types of fraud, because you are policing your own customers in a way that you are not always, which doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it. It just means it requires some additional thought and care as you go through the process.
Mm. And then there's areas that could also be helped. And we're seeing a lot of this. We've talked, I think it was H&M last week, talked about they're going to start charging for returns. And I think I get why they'd want to do that, to deter. I'm not sure whether that's going to help in the long term. Where we certainly see activities such as wardrobing or free renting, you know, this is where items are purchased to use one time, labels are hidden or whatever for the evening that they're being worn, and then stuff's being returned. That's quite a prolific part of friendly fraud. What we've noticed is that a lot of merchants are now putting labels or larger tags on the outside of the garment that can't be hidden. And, you know, whilst that's something that's sort of outside of the e-commerce fraud and risk strategy, again, it's good mitigating practice to have in there. But then there's also the opportunistic buyers that are just returning items because they change their mind and become impatient with delivery times. So I think it's quite important to sort of understand maybe some of the reason codes behind returns, and then start looking at the patterns in activity and associating those returns to those original transactions, and really start understanding that data and the correlation between the two, because there will invariably be patterns in there. And the knowledge that's gleaned from that activity and that analysis can certainly be used in the front end.
Definitely. And I'm glad you called out about charging for returns, because that's not a perfect solution for first party fraud. There's, you know, there's many, many reasons to do it, but I can imagine someone trying that to combat first party fraud. But you run into the issue again of, you are now also punishing all of your regular customers in addition to who want to make an honest return, but it costs additional money. So there's a balance. You have to be very careful not to hurt too many other consumers when you are also combating those who are committing friendly fraud.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that, Dan, as well. I don't think it's the solution. I think it remains to be seen how successful or how long H&M keeps that policy going. But I think what it indicates is it's clearly a problem. So again, I think the understanding data isn't going to necessarily solve every single instance of friendly fraud. But if you start to track those successful transactions that result in a return or a refund, as I said, they'll be committed probably by a group of people, and there will be some correlation in the data that can be utilized and then prevented in the front, the checkout process, just to make the checkout maybe have a little more friction for those types of customers that seem to be making or exploiting the generosity of these merchants.
Man, I think like you really hit on it when you said that it's very important for merchants to take a look at the data, because as you spoke and as you've seen in the industry, there's so many different types of like fraud that's out there. And if I was a merchant, I think I would have constant headaches every single day trying to figure out which one I honestly need to tackle, whether it's stolen merchandise fraud or like if a consumer says that they receive an empty box when the merchant actually sent out the product. And myself as a consumer, I've seen merchants and retailers start adding specific tags that if you do remove it as a customer, that's your item. You're not able to return it because you've consented essentially to saying like, okay, the tag, I purposely am removing this tag, thereby this is going to be the item that I paid for, and I'm not going to come back 3 months later to return it. So I think that data is going to be especially crucial for them to really take a look and try to figure out the best way in terms of what they need to tackle.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
Shifting gears just slightly, you know, it's widely known in the industry that the ubiquitous silver bullet doesn't exist. Can you speak to why that is?
Yeah, and there's a lot of people out there that will claim it is. But no, despite what everyone says, machine learning is the key to the future. And it's certainly amazing. So I am not here to say that it's not. But we've heard of the sort of analogies of bad data in, bad data out, and successful AI solutions are very dependent on the person that's building them. So of that, you know, you have to be a little bit careful. However, is it a useful tool in the overall armory that you utilize when you're putting your fraud strategy together? 100% yes. So it is a very, very beneficial tool. But the silver bullet is really referencing, is there one fraud tool today that can do everything? No, there's not. There'll be people that claim it can, and that will be forever will exist in the market. But personally, I think that there are a lot of really good tools in the market. And for us, the silver bullet really is around how you use those tools. That's what creates the silver bullet. And if you can sort of put a lot of very useful tools and technologies into one place, make that place easy to access, then that's going to give you the best bang for your buck. And the reason for that is because it's taking some of that heavy lifting away from the merchant themselves. It's enabling the merchant to tap into something where once within that fraud orchestration, as we're calling it, you can then tailor the right strategy appropriate to the right geography, the right sort of product set. It could be the value, it could be the type of payment that you're taking, it could be around the delivery method that's being utilized. Yeah, there's so many different nuances, as we talked at the very top about non-linear journeys. Your strategy has got to be aligned to those non-linear journeys. So it's really important to use different tools. Is that, I don't know if the horses for courses analogy, you need to make sure you've got the right tools to effectively perform and optimize revenue on the different channels that as an e-commerce merchant you're utilizing. I can't emphasize that enough. Just throwing loads of tools at one problem to fix it may work, but it's a little bit like, you know, throwing it at a wall and seeing what sticks. What you really need to be doing is understanding the data, understanding the problem that you're trying to fix, and then using the tools that you have within that orchestration layer to effectively mitigate fraud, but most importantly, optimize revenue, manage out cost. And that is not a one-size-fits-all offering. Yes, it can be automated. Nobody needs to touch it, but it will need refinement as well. But it's about understanding what you're trying to fix and then continually monitoring and measuring the success of that strategy and then amending as appropriate.
Yeah, and it's important to remember that not only is there not a silver bullet, there's also when the solutions that there are available are not going to prevent friendly fraud from occurring in the first place in all cases. You can obviously limit it and you should try to, but you not only need to limit it, you need to be prepared to combat it after it occurs. It's part of doing business as a merchant that there's going to be all kinds of fraud. It would be great if you could stop it from happening in the first place. And there are things you can do to cut it down, but you need to be prepared to manage these cases as they come up. You can't just hope you can stop it. You need to do what you can to stop it, but then also do what you can to handle it once it had occurred.
Yeah, and that's a great point. You know, you've referenced there friendly fraud. You won't have the same strategy to look at friendly fraud as you would to look at synthetic identity fraud. And that's the sort of point, is that using different tools and technologies allows you to be a little more clear about the digital identity of that individual presenting for payment. Are they the genuine consumer or are they not? If it turns out they are the genuine consumer and then down the line you see that they have committed friendly fraud, be it through a refund that they've asked for, a chargeback they've created, or they've returned or not returned an item, then you can utilize the knowledge of that scenario and then use that to make sure you possibly create a little or add a bit of friction if that customer presents for payment again. But you'll have the data to know and be able to have a strategy for that occurrence taking place. If it's synthetic identity fraud, then you want to be able to look at lots of data within that transaction and be able to make an accurate assessment. And again, silver bullets don't exist to do that. So using lots of different technologies, you can accurately or do a 365 degree assessment of that transaction to be as sure as you can be that it's the genuine consumer or not.
I mean, I'm sure this is all very top of mind for you, especially working at ACI. Can you speak to what ACI is doing to protect its customers, you know, particularly when it comes to things like friendly fraud?
Yeah, and really it's kind of a bit all of the above, what I've been saying. We process and make decisions for around 80,000 customers, be that directly or indirectly. So we do work with a number of different partners. And again, it's down to understanding the problems that we're trying to solve. Some customers' priorities could be around reducing cost, where others are around reducing fraud. Others are looking at ways to automate better. So again, it's about using the fraud orchestration and digital identity services that we have within that orchestration to use that smartly against the data that we are seeing for those particular merchants and advising them on the optimal strategy that they can have in place with those tools. And as I said, you know, that doesn't ever really stay completely still, because as we know, fraud matures over a sort of 3-4 month period, and then it may be that you need to mitigate or change the strategy to mitigate another problem. You may have to have a short-term strategy because you may be suffering from account takeover, which we know is still, again, very prevalent. It really is for us about making sure that when we form a relationship with a new merchant, that we understand the problem we're trying to fix first, and then collaboratively have alignment over how we want that strategy to evolve and what the focus areas of that strategy needs to be. We normally put to a customer, you know, what an incremental sort of 1-2% would look like to them. And when you start talking in those sort of terms, you really can see the importance of being sure about the problem that you're trying to fix, because ultimately it's about driving value from the service that you're offering.
Thank you both for sharing your insights and perspective and discussing the steps that merchants are taking to fortify their defenses and really tackle friendly fraud. And thanks to everyone for tuning in today. Be sure to subscribe and stay updated on the latest Payments Journal episodes. And don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues.